You as a club need to decide, merge or fold.
You can't just force us into a merger.
What's a merger?
Oh, it's when one shit team joins up with another shit team to make a slightly less shit team.
You can get quadruple your funding by accessing grants to employ refugees for the rebuild.
What good are club rooms if we don't have a team?
These both can swing a hammer. I reckon they can kick a footy, yeah?
Hello and welcome to the Matt's Movie Reviews Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Perkovich, and this is episode number 154. Releasing on the 30th of August is The Merger, an Australian-made sports comedy that tells the story of a disgraced fictional AFL star named Troy Carrington in his attempt to turn a country town footy team into a winning squad, among them refugees from various corners of the world whose attempts to assimilate are balked at by other members of the community. Joining me to talk about The Merger is a film star and writer, Damien Callinan. Damien, I thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
That's all right, mate. Glad to be here.
So, Damien, this was based on a one-man play. I just wanted to go back a bit and find out how that play came about. And, like, did you play multiple characters in the play? How did it all work?
One-man play, obviously, just me. But there's tricks to the trade of pulling that off. But I played 9 different characters. So one of those was the disembodied voice of Warwick Randall, the community radio announcer. Two were sock puppets, actually, in the very first iteration. So the roles played by Josh McConville and Nick Cody of Snapper and Goober, respectively, were first sock puppets. For the second run of the show, I got a proper puppeteer to make slightly better puppets, but there were puppets nonetheless. So, it was... That's kind of my niche area of performance. Over the years, I do straight stand-up, but I also do character comedy. So for many years, I've been doing one-man shows where I play... I think the most I crammed into a show was 13.
13. So 13 characters in one play?
In one play, yeah.
Wow. And the decision to adapt The Merger into a feature film, I mean, how did that come about?
Quite organically, Matt. From the very beginning, after people saw the show, I had this kind of wave of people who would go, that was fantastic, it should be a film. And it happened quite regularly. And there's quite a cinematic quality to the one-man show in that the small boy who is represented in the film, Neil, who's played by Rafferty Grierson, and in the play, he was pivotal because he was crafting this documentary. And it just allowed me to be able to break up the scenes, and he could narrate the action to a certain point and narrate the change in the town as the refugees took hold. It was really, by the time I'd done the first couple of runs at the Melbourne Comedy Festival and the Adelaide Fringe Festival, people were already, you know, suggesting that that's where it should go. And that doesn't happen all the time. I've done previously quite a lot of one-man shows, but I've never got that, that common response. So the seed was planted right from the beginning of doing it on stage.
Once you decide to adapt to film, which is like a totally different medium, where do you start? Do you strip back the story? Do you start from the beginning? Or is it just a simple case of just doing transition one character at a time?
Initially I worked with a comedian friend of mine, Gavin Basketball. He was the first one who, after the play, went, I love that, it should be a film, and I'll help you. And Gavin had a little bit more experience than me in film studies, so we just kind of took it into the shed, started pulling it apart, putting it back together. We were both very mindful of keeping what worked for the live show, but I just had a lot of lessons to learn, and it was a slow process. We were, around about that point, that's when Mark Gretzel came on board. Mark and I had previously done a feature film together that co-written and directed. And, I helped him with some of the writing, particularly in my scenes in that film, even though it was very much their work. So we had a good working relationship, and Mark also had a much stronger grasp of film structure. But yeah, I was lucky enough to get, we just got drip funding, you know, from Screen New South Wales, who loved it, but said we needed to do more work on it.
Mm.
So I kind of kept finding myself with different mentors. The first guy I worked with was a guy called Simon Vandenberg, who's an English script consultant. And I'm Skype relationship with him. So we just sit there in the wee hours chatting and workshopping. And he was the first one to kind of help me understand film structure and its importance. And then it was a little bit like shedding a skin, Matt. It was keeping the same name of the project in spirit, but slowly shedding the aspects of the one-man show. Because, of course, in a film, you can show everything, but in a one-man show, you're having to allude to everything. So a lot of my scenes were very much the beginning. You see the beginning that you wouldn't see the actual scene, and then you'd see the end of it, the aftermath. But and Kelly Lefevre, who was my last script editor, she was really good at saying, "See what you've done there? You've just skipped the action. You've skipped the meat." So yeah, it was a slow shedding of the skin till the new merger emerged.
I want to talk about your character of Troy. Troy Carrington, which I also think that is a great name for a character as well. The thing about Troy is your regular bloke, great sense of humour. One thing about him that separates him from other characters I've seen in Australian film is that he's an idealist. He has these ideas, yep. And he sticks behind them. He has conviction behind them. I'm just curious, when it comes to creating a character like that, how much of you is in a character, and how much does a character, after playing for so long, inform your own point of view on things?
It's a good point. I need to kind of go back a little bit with Troy, because he began... I've been doing Troy since 1999, I think was the first time he ever kind of popped into my head.
Wow.
And originally the character was very much just a what-if, which is often happens. What if there was a footballer who... rather than talking about, you know, fights and womanizing and stuff at sports, it's like, what if he spoke quite culturally, mm-hmm. but still sounded like he fitted in the oeuvre? So I had a one-man show called Speech Night where I played all the characters in a fictional Catholic boys' school kind of valedictory night, and Troy was the headline. It was that great tradition of, you know, particularly Catholic working-class schools that, you know, they might have a Nobel Prize-winning scientist as their alumni, but they'll recognise the guy who played 13 games at four clubs over 9 years because it was AFL. Anyway, the character just stole the show. Everyone loved it. And
yeah.
I started doing him in corporate events, and then when the merger live show was actually a sequel of parts to another show I did based on the true story of a country football club that had been banned for 3 years for a massive fight that happened in the playground before the game. And a number of the players were put in hospital, and this particular club were being painted in the media as the victim, even though they had this culture of violence. So it was really interesting. I then took Troy and went, okay, well, what can he do to help in this situation? So I put him in the play, and he became the main character. And it was really interesting. I was watching this character that is me just evolve, and he became a lot more principled, and he still had this... you know, kind of dichotomy of football locker room kind of talk, but he also had an agenda.
Yeah.
And so then when the merger came about, and I was commissioned by Regional Arts Victoria and Vic Health to write a show about racism, they kind of pointed to Troy and went, "You've already got the base character and Bull Barlow, which John Howard plays in the film. You've already got those characters there." So they didn't say do it, but I went, okay, I reckon I know what to do. And so Troy is this incredible evolution. And so when I had to put him in film, he then had to be a lot more human, because on a stage show, when you're trying to differentiate between nine characters, they have to be a bit more arch and quite clearly recognisable. And he'd never interacted with human beings before. He's only ever been on stage on his own. So the Troy Carrington in the film is, it's a really good question you ask, it is kind of halfway between me and Troy. I believe the same things as Troy, but Troy's just got a more direct and obtuse all at the same time way of going about it. In this case, it's going, you know what, I can save the footy club by saving other people.
A central issue in the movie is that of refugees in Australia, and it's an issue that touches a lot of people. I myself and a son of parents who came to Australia from Croatia back in 1969. So there's a lot of people just can relate to the subject. You are very passionate about the subject. Where does that passion come from, and what are you hoping the merger can say about the issue to others who are going to watch the film come next week?
Yeah, look, I've probably grown more passionate as it's gone on, but I've always held the conviction that we need to be doing more to resettle and to understand. I think Australians are willfully ignorant at times, not all, obviously, that we support our government in going into war zones and, you know, just jumping on the back of American foreign policy, but we then jump up and down when the very same refugees that are caused by those conflicts aren't given passage and acceptance into our country. So I guess I'm trying to battle against the ignorance. And it's the whole film's about empathy, and that's my kind of my modus operandi, really. But the empathy works both ways, too. We also have to understand why in a small community like Bodgy Creek that's got this intake of refugees, why do they not understand?
Mm.
And it's not always willful. It's sometimes it's just circumstance. And we're trying to paint the characters who are the antagonists in this as John Howard's character, for instance. He's just had a bad run. Like, the world's changing around him, and he can't change with it. And it's not until he gets to meet and get to know the refugees that he really sees the full despair, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, look, I've just got a view that I don't think this film will change people's minds, but I've done the live show in small country towns where it's at least started the dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's made them, you know, in the film we've got four refugee ethnicities kind of represented, and you just get a little insight, one more than others, into the background of why they're there. And it's all horrific, every single one of them. It's not like there's a joke in it where one of the characters says, "Oh, so you're a chemist, don't you come here for a better job?" And he said, "No, I came here because the government thought we were rebels and they shot at us." Just putting it in simplistic terms and putting it in a conversation rather than in a lecture.
Yep. And I think it works.
So I guess,
it works really well as well, the way that you did it.
Yeah, so I did a lot of reading and research to distill even those few moments. And there was a lot of changing ethnicities from the live show, and then even through the drafting, to be honest, just to partially to match the actors that we were able to get. I pained for a long time over the main character in the live show. It was an Afghan Hazara. And I'm quite passionate about their story, because we have been so involved militaristically in Afghanistan. I think we have a debt to understand what's going on there, and most people don't understand the ethnic complexity of Afghanistan. But we just couldn't find an actor that quite worked in the role, and then Faisal Barzi, who plays Saeed, is half Syrian, half Lebanese, and in some ways, we felt telling the Syrian story, because it's so front and centre, was a bit more pertinent at the moment. I mean, all the stories are as relevant as each other, but because it is so in the news, and all again, people don't understand the complexity of what's happening there.
With Faisal as Saeed, I actually went to high school with Faisal. He and I... We're in the same year together over at Cogramara, so a Catholic school here down in Sydney. I've been keeping track of his career, just like with that connection there. And it's really great to see him landing these roles, especially this role of Saeed in your movie. When was the first time that you saw Faisal and you were like, you know, I think this is a guy that can take on this role?
Well, interestingly, Mark Granoll, the director, we worked really closely with the casting, and as a writer, I had pretty strong ideas about, not so much about people, but I thought, this role should be a comedian, or this role should be, or this is a role that we could experiment with a genuine refugee who perhaps isn't as experienced. But the role of Saeed was so pivotal, because particularly in the film and in the live show, it was the place where people, the outsiders, you know, in this case the audience, can start to connect to him. connect to the refugee story because, for those who haven't seen the film, he's learned English by reading AFL biographies and attention, and he's good at footy, and he's got the brashness of the Australian spirit. He stands up to people. So he's quite, from an Australian point of view, stereotypical point of view, he's quite likeable in that sense. But anyway, Faisal read, we did a table read of the script. It was the first time we'd got to read it out loud in front of the various screen bodies, and Faisal read the role of Saeed, and both Mark and I, by the end of it, knew, we both went, look, we've got him in our pocket. At this stage, the character is still Hazara. Hazara's a very specific look, and he wouldn't have worked if we'd kept the character as it was, but slowly but surely, we just went, we're just going to rewrite it to fit him, because he was just so damn good.
Another actor in the film, John Howard. He's one of Australia's greats. Been around for a long time. A lot of people know him on film and TV. The decision to cast him as Bull Barlow, how did that come about?
Early in the process, we kept going to the screen bodies, and that there was always encouragement. It was like they'd leave the door open, but then not offer you a cup of tea, if you like. It was, we love it. Okay, go away. Go back home, ask your parents, do a bit more work.
Yeah.
And one of the times they said, look, right, we love what you're doing. Here's a list of things that you need to think about before you apply for the next round of funding. And one of those was to get some names attached, which is a hard thing to do when you're just thinking about the process still and not the outcome. But we had to kind of stop here. Okay, well, and that was the role, because I was playing the role of Troy, and I don't have the box office appeal of people like John. So we went through a few names, and you could probably, you could almost have a guess. Who else do you reckon we looked for?
Just going on top of my head, because of association with the club, maybe Jack Thompson could be in there as well.
Jack was on the list.
Yeah. Just off another kind of thing, maybe Brian Brown,
you're on the right track. So we went down all of those. Michael Caton was another one we looked at.
Of course, yeah.
And none of them in my head went, obviously it would have been rough to have any of them in it. But then John came up, and it was the first time I kind of went, you know what, I could see, because John plays vulnerability really well.
Yeah.
His role as Bob Jelly in Sea Change, I reckon, showed that kind of bellicose but slightly broken man. So we approached John, and then Kate's name came up. Mark suggested Kate, and I just said yes straight away. And thankfully for us, we sent in the script, and both of them got back as quickly as you could hope, with an emphatic yes. And John wrote a really lovely note about the script, just saying this is an important story and I really believe in it and would love to be on board. So, those were the easiest ones to cast, and they've both been absolute joys to work with.
The movie, of course, deals with Australian footy, AFL. When it comes to filming the scenes of these players in the Bodgy Creek Roosters on the field doing their thing, how many of the actors actually knew how to play? Did you guys have to do a bit of training beforehand?
We did have a coach from the Wagga Wagga Tigers Football Club came down and did a couple of sessions with us, but we're in a kind of unique situation in that the players didn't need to look, particularly the refugees, they had to look awkward to mm-hmm. begin with. And most of them were acting, case in point, both Francis Kamara, who plays Didier, he's quite athletic and plays AFL in Wagga. Francis is one of the great stories in the film. He's a refugee from Sierra Leone, came out when he was 10 to Wagga, settled there, and is studying acting at Charles Sturt University.
Mm-hmm.
And once he auditioned, we again kind of changed the ethnicity to match him a little bit. And Josh McConville, who plays Snapper, who's supposed to be the shittest player in the team, refugees and locals alike, was probably the most athletic person. But he played rugby union. But he's a brilliant clown, so you'll see the few times where he kicks the footy, it's hilarious. But we did do a little bit of drilling, and I played footy till I was 30. Nick Cody played footy. Aaron Gox, who plays Porterhouse, he runs around occasionally in the reserves for his local team out there in Ballarat. So we had enough experience to pass on, and Cody was very good at working with some of the guys to make them look right. Faisal was the one we had to make at least look athletic. But he still looks a little bit proppy when he kicks the footy, but that's fine, because if you don't grow up with the ball on the end of your, you know, hand and foot like what I did and Nick Cody did, you're never going to look like perfection. So, and to be honest, the footy scenes aren't that important in the film. Most of the time they're conversation-based, with the footy kind of happening, coming in and out of them, so particularly in a grand final.
On that point, though, you still consider the film as something as a sports film, considering you are dealing with AFL. It's a central kind of thing in there. And it comes to the question that I have, I think sometimes with Australia and sports films in Australia, we are a sports mad country. We take our sports seriously, all different types of sports, all different types of codes. However, sports in films isn't represented as highly as, say, in America, where there's a baseball film, there's DDs, there's gridiron film, and stuff like that. Why do you think the transition isn't there in the Australian film industry to kind of bring sports, whether it be rugby league or AFL sports, which I think can be adapted cinematically? I mean, these are hard hitting sports, they're fast, there's action in it, but there's not that many movies made about it.
The actual sport itself is very hard to capture. I think that's part of the problem. There was a feature film from about 4 or 5 years ago called Blinder.
Yeah.
That was based around a football club, and they went to great lengths to get the football action right. And I actually haven't seen it. I've seen bits of it, but Mark Grinnell and Tony Liu, our DOP, deliberately watched it just to see how they captured that. And they said, it looks great. It looks like a real football match, but it's completely bereft of drama because it's so authentic. I think that's part of it. Certainly we've had a lot of pushback from initially, not so much now that the film's developing momentum, but we've had pushback from people, cinema chains even, kind of going, Australian sports comedies don't work, and also there's the great divide, the AFL-NRL divide.
Mm-hmm.
People going, it's about AFL, it's not going to work in Sydney.
Mm.
That kind of stuff, but I don't really know this. There was a tradition for quite a while of AFL films, kind of back in the 70s and 80s with the great McCarthy and the club and the Big Men Fly, nearly all of which came from literary traditions. It came from theatre, as is mine, which is interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Final question, Damien. The Merger's had like a very interesting evolution. Starts off as a one-man play, is now a feature film. I have a feeling that this is a story, the characters within, is something a lot of people want to see more of. Is there any talk at all or any idea of maybe adapting this into some sort of like TV series? Because I think a weekly kind of series based on Bodger Creek and the people within it and the comedy, the themes, the sport connection, I think it's something that can really resonate to the Australian public.
Yeah, it's a good point, Matt. There's been, going back to when people first started saying it should be a film, the odd person would say TV, and I know my manager at the time was like, what do you think, is it a film or TV? I think the story that I created is very filmic. It's, you know, it's very three-act. But because I have created these characters in different formats, in different live shows, I also have a podcast based on the Bodger Creek Roosters, which really just came about because the funding process is so slow with film. I thought, well, if I create a podcast and it just directs a whole new audience potentially to the film when it comes. So I can endlessly create stories in this world. So it's very possible. SBS actually approached Mark once they found out we'd been funded. It was only one conversation, but it's almost exactly as you said. This could be an episodic piece. So I haven't really thought beyond this precipice, but I think there's a lot of love for the characters, and if I forget a bit of time and space, I'll think about I'll think about whether they can live in TV as well.
Well, I hope it is something that does happen, because like I said, I love the movie. I love the characters. And for everyone listening out there, 30th of August, The Merger hits Australian cinemas. I do recommend everyone watch this film. Damien, congratulations to you on the movie.
Thanks, Matt.
And the work you put into adapting it from your one-man play from sock puppets up to the real thing. I mean, I think you did a really good job there. And once again, congratulations, and thank you very much for your time today.
No worries, Matt.